just right.
Just to update people, Nikki's going to run the thing, and it's going to be like a moderating a presidential debate, or almost like Hollywood Squares, a giant Hollywood Squares. We have quite a few guests. Our main guest that we got in today is James Fox, and we're going to go through the documentary that he's just released, The Phenomenon. And I should read the rules, first of all, because we always have people who may not have been on Zoom. We have people joining us on Facebook Live, but the people that are on the Zoom broadcast, this is a come and go. So if you've got to go, don't be afraid to come and go whenever you want. If you have to go to the bathroom, just turn off, make sure your mic is off, because if your wife or husband comes in and tells you to quit watching the UFO stuff, everybody's going to see it. We don't require you to wear a mask, but we do require that if you want to interact, and that's the way we'll work it, is there's a thing for putting your hand up on the to request permission to talk, and Nikki will move from one person to another. And we're going to basically start with the introductions here. And while I'm doing that, Nikki's going to do some shares of the link. So we're joined today by the following guests. Tom from MUFON, Tom Whitmore. How you doing, Tom?
Good.
Thanks for joining us. And
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Beautiful. And we also have sort of the expert on abductions, Millabs. And the only person, I always point out, the only person that's actually talking to Jim Semivan, sort of on the record, and that's Melinda Leslie. And from, how you doing, Melinda? Are you there? You ready to go? Melinda,
don't be bashful.
She's muted.
Okay.
Don't be bashful.
The next person we have is the sort of the head of UFO disclosure in Canada. It was Victor Vigiani, who runs Z-Line Communications and also is co-hosting a radio show in Canada. And I'm sure we're going to be doing disclosure day, so I'm sure he's got some input from this. How are you doing, Victor?
You have two bashful people as well.
Right. Maybe we should just go through. I'll just go through, and we'll when you want to talk, then you can open your mic. We also have, and everybody thought this was Joe Biden. Today we have Joe Bookman, who's also run for political office on the UFO issue from Utah, and he was the moderator of the citizens' hearing in 2013, and has done extensive work on testimonies from various disclosure witnesses.
Hey, Grant. Just proven I can talk.
Good. There you go. And just for the record, Joe Biden in 2008 was asked the UFO question about disclosure after a presidential debate, and he was not very positive about UFOs, but that was 2008. Maybe he's changed his mind. Bob McGuire, is Bob McGuire here?
You know, he is not.
He's not. Okay,
no, Bob McGuire
can join us. He's our science
Bob
guy.
Said the thing saying he would be late.
Okay.
His earlier conference was running late.
Okay.
But he tried to join midstream. And Don Schmidt was here, but went away.
And Bob, of interest to me, he worked at the Institute for Defense Analysis, which is the top military think tank for the U.S. for many years. And I wrote a book on Dr. Eric Walker and his involvement in UFOs. And he was the chairman of the Institute for Defense Analysis. So I'm always interested to hear what Bob's got to say, because he was on the inside in terms of the big secrets that were being held in the United States. From England, we have Jay joining us. He has Project Unity, and he's done a lot of work on the Wilson leak and all the latest material that's coming out with regards to disclosure and that sort of thing. So I welcome Jay. And this time he at least is not the guy that's here at 2 o'clock in the morning. Usually he's has to appear at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. It's 7 o'clock there. So he'll be a lot brighter than he was.
Yeah, it's James Rigney's turn to do that. I'm feeling ready and I'm ready to rock and roll.
Beautiful. And Danny Silva, I call him one of the young gun guys who has Silva Record, who has done a lot of major articles on the latest UFO disclosure material. And he's been on Coast to Coast. So welcome, Danny.
Thank you, Grant.
And a longtime friend of mine, Peter Robbins, is here live from New York. And he's an expert. He did some study on the death of James Forrestal, the Secretary of Defense. He worked with Bud Hopkins. He did a book on Rendlesham. He's knows about the Rendlesham Forest case. And of interest that maybe people don't know, Peter Robbins was with me in Pennsylvania at a cabin with the guy whose name he's being called Tyler D. So Peter was with me, and he's actually met Tyler D, who, if you look at American Cosmic, is the main figure in that book. So welcome, Peter. It's been a long time.
Yeah, Grant, too long. Good to see you.
Beautiful. And is Don Schmidt here?
Yes, he is.
Yes.
Yay!
Well, James Fox's latest documentary that we're going to be talking about in a minute here is deals with the Roswell case, and Don Schmidt is one of the top Roswell reporters of all times. He's, as I always say, he sold 50 million books on the subject, and he's here joining us from Wisconsin, and we really appreciate him taking time from his busy schedule to join us.
Where is he?
Yeah, where are you, Don?
And he has, does he have a suit on? That's what everybody wants to know.
I know.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
He
sleeps with his suit on.
I'm guessing maybe his feed dropped. I don't see his image either.
Yeah, he was here briefly, and he was wearing a suit and tie, which is why I'm going to give him a hard time over my Route 66 shirt.
Obviously, he's been cut off by the NSA or the aliens. Take a pick.
I'll try to find him again.
Okay, and we're really honored. After last night, Donald Trump went on Fox News, and right after Donald Trump is our next guest, who's James Fox, who has a new documentary called The Phenomena. I have seen it. It is absolutely spectacular. It fits into my theory of wow. As I was going through, I'm going like, wow, because that I have a theory of what's going on. And it goes through UFO history, major stories. It has a lot of material in the documentary that is rare footage, and he cleaned it up as he told us as he was coming in here. Fantastic documentary. We're going to show the trailer, and then we're going to open it up for questions for James Fox. So welcome, James. We're glad you could make it today.
A pleasure to be on with you guys.
Yeah. And the next guy is a guy whose name appears in the credits quite a few times on James Fox's documentary. It's a friend of mine from Australia who sort of created a very interesting time in my life when he gave me four documents from the Edgar Mitchell collection, and the one has become kind of famous. It's the Wilson Leak document, and James is joining us in the middle of the morning from Australia, and I really welcome him to our broadcast here.
Hi, Grant. Thanks for that. Hi, everyone.
Beautiful.
Great to be here, but it's 5 in the morning, so I may be a bit incoherent.
Friday morning? Wait a minute. Is that Saturday morning or Sunday? No.
Sunday morning.
Sorry?
I don't know what day it is. So, I think it's 5 a.m. Sunday morning.
Where were you last night at 2 a.m.?
And our last two guests.
On board.
Yeah.
Our last
watching the phenomena, James.
Canada. I have two film people from Canada. There's a new documentary coming out in Canada. I'm going to show you the trailer after we're sort of in the latter part of this broadcast. And one is Rob Freeman, who I believe is doing the most important research in the paranormal field, and that is the blindfold stuff with Wendy Gallant. And Rob Freeman joins me from London, Ontario, and his film guy is Mark McCann from Toronto. And I'm going to be showing a little video clip at the end. They came to Manitoba, and we did two of the biggest UFO cases in Canada. One that got me started, and the other one was the Falcon Lake case, which we call the Canadian Roswell case. And thanks to Rob Freeman's financing, we actually went in on horseback. I'm going to describe this, and we were actually at the site of this very, very famous case that somebody in the Condon Report said If this case is true, it proves there's people visiting the Earth or something to that effect. So with that, that's our lineup of guests. Hopefully I didn't miss anybody. And I'm going to start here by going, and I'm going to take over the screen once I get back to this. I'm going to take over the screen and we're going to show the... oh, you got to allow me to share screen, Nikki.
Oh.
Go to the my name and then more and then allow share or something.
Or...
Or maybe that's not set up.
It doesn't say, there's not a share option to activate.
Go to the bottom of the screen. Is there something on the bottom of the screen there for share screen? Is there an up arrow there?
Yes. And it gives my, it's share my screen though, so...
So, Nicole, if you go to participants and then click on Grant's name, I think the settings are there.
Okay. Do, 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 do.
You need some elevator music.
I know. Do, do,
do, do, do. If it comes down to it, I can put the trailer on my phone and put it up to the webcam.
Yeah,
right.
Get it ready. We may have to do that.
Yeah, get ready to do that.
Getting ready.
Okay.
Share, it just says share my screen. Or when I click it. And under your name, there's not an option. I made you a co-host thinking that would maybe give you permission.
Oh, I can share. Okay, I'm sharing now. Hang on.
Okay, you got it.
Okay.
Say goodbye.
Can everybody see my, here's my screen coming up here.
Okay.
It says you've started a screen share. Yep, there we go.
Yeah, there we go.
Roger that. Hey.
So here should be the trailer if it works.
I knew this was breaking news for the front page of the New York Times.
We need to accept that we are not alone in the universe.
The federal government, all these years, has covered up everything. It's very, very bad for our country.
There have been visitation, crashed craft, material recovered.
It was not anything from this earth. All I could do is keep a mouth shut.
The public has a right to know.
There's a tremendous resistance.
I guarantee every one of them knows that this event happened.
Hiding these dark secrets even from elected presidents.
They came running up here in such a panic. Sean can't make that up.
Declassified government documents confirm ongoing UFO incursions at nuclear weapons sites.
Are you saying that there's some evidence that still hasn't seen the light of day?
I'm saying most of it hasn't seen the light of day.
These things are real. They're here. This is happening now.
Woo!
I gotta see that one. Jesus.
Okay.
I almost fell off my chair.
So tell us a bit about it, James, and about the how did the rollout take? Because you spent years trying to get this thing out. So to give us a little bit of background on how it got out and what the reaction of the people is and stuff like that.
Well, first of all, thank you, by the way, for having me on. One thing I'd like to say to all of the UFO community, which I consider myself a part of, people that have participated greatly, people like Don Schmidt and Kevin Randall, researchers in Australia that I interviewed, have all said, you know, I didn't make the final cut. And I want to make it abundantly clear that I didn't cut anyone out intentionally. It wasn't like we literally finished, because we edited the film in segments. We did segments in Australia, segments in Africa, segments in, you know, the Socorro case and South America, China. We ended up with a film that was like close to 4 hours long when we stitched it together, and we just had to keep cutting it down and cutting it down and cutting it down. And I remember we had the distinct privilege of working with Jacques Vallée, and he would come to these marathon edit sessions in this little shack at the end of a dirt road in the town where I live. And we just called it kind of killing our darlings. I mean, we had to get brutal about it and whittle the film down to a viewable, you know, I got it down to about 2 hours and 10 minutes. I had a screening of about 250 people, a private screening. And I could see people fidgeting about an hour and a half in, you know, looking at their watches, getting up, going to the bathroom. And I knew that it was too long again, still. So we had to cut it down to about 90 minutes, maybe 93 minutes, something like that. It's longer with the credits in the end. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm just going to cut this researcher out because I didn't like what they have to say, or I don't like who they are. I really need people to understand that it was that brutal. It came down to a fact of, we need to put the film first and the phenomenon first and do what's best for the film. And so hopefully the credits at the end of the film reflect that, because the people that participated in any capacity, I did everything I could possibly do to make sure they get included in the credits. And I used to wake up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. going, oh my gosh, how could I possibly have forgotten about this person? And I still didn't get everybody in the credits, I'm sure. So I just wanted to make that statement abundantly clear right away, just because I've been getting some comments from different threads on social media, and I just wanted to make that clear. And we truly appreciate, this is a group effort, it takes a village, and the film's success is all of our success, quite honestly. And yeah, so that's that thing. And then in terms of, you know, getting the film finally done, I mean, look, I started the film in 2000, and we were filming in 2014, concept in 2013. We actually started filming in 2014. And we were getting close to having the film done, I think, 3 years ago, kind of. And then the front page of the New York Times, that story broke about ATIP, and we were like, we have to include this. So I think that added a couple of years of production time. And then the ink dries on the contracts for a major theatrical release in roughly 1500 theaters across the United States. And then Corona hit. So, you know, it, what a roller coaster of a ride. We had to pivot. We had all kinds of problems with our distribution. Anyway, we got it worked out finally. And I'm just tremendously relieved that the film is finally out.
I can echo those sentiments, James. I spent 12 hours over 2 days, 6 hours each day, with the Discovery Channel up here in Canada. And I was sequestered in a studio for 6 hours each day. And I'm not sure exactly when whatever I did or contributed to this particular production is going to come out, or even if it's going to come out. But I've been told that I'll be lucky to get 4 minutes out of those 12 hours.
Yeah, good.
It's the nature of the beast. If you're a quality documentary filmmaker or doing a quality television production, you're always going to end up with reams more very usable footage than you can possibly add. And then you go through the trials and tribulations that you're describing, James. The wonderful documentary that I was proud to be an associate producer in came out about 5 years ago, Travis, the true story of Travis Walton. The filmmaker, Jennifer Stein, ended up with, like you, so much more workable footage that wasn't able to be included in a 90-minute feature that we are this summer beginning with the second half of it, picking up where it left off and incorporating all of these new breaking materials into it. So bravo for doing the wonderful job that you've done. It's superhuman and it's rough work, partly because of the emotional decision-making as well as the quality control. You want it all to be where it came out. So way to go, James.
Thank you, Peter. You know, there's a moment when I remember in the timeline putting together this section that was probably took me, you know, 6 months to edit, and then probably about a year to film, and it had to go. And I had to close, I'm not kidding you, I had to close my eyes, take a deep breath, and then hit the delete button. And it was like, oh.
It's like a part of you died.
It was like somebody punched me right in the solar plexus and I was just gutted right there on the spot. But, and my friend looked at me and he goes, you got to do it, James. You got to do it. Like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. James. It's called triage.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know about everyone else here, but I'm pretty confident when I say we pay you real hard cash money for the volume 2 deleted scenes, 3 hour.
I hear bonus footage.
Okay, so people are already talking about that. Obviously, you know which direction that's headed in, but I literally have PTSD from this film. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I was almost hospitalized from making this movie. There was a time when I thought I was dying. Like, I had pains coming down my neck. I thought I had brain cancer down in my arms. I couldn't walk. I was lying on a medicine ball on my back, and I was with this editor, partner of mine, Lance, and I was directing from on the floor in this little cabin with no bathroom and no sink, no running water. And I'm like looking up at him, and he looks down at me and he goes, what the hell is wrong with you? You need to go to the doctor. You are in the worst state I've ever seen. I was like, we got to get this movie done. He goes, you can't get it done if you die, you idiot. Like, you know, so I went in and actually went to a chiropractor. I went to see a therapist. I was doing like hot baths. I mean, I'm not kidding you guys. I sound melodramatic, but I'm not exaggerating bit. It nearly killed me.
Yep.
And then we had curveballs thrown, run out of money. I can't tell you how many times I was begging for more money. It was like, well, you said that this amount of money was going to get you across the finishing line. It's like, well, I was wrong. Sorry. You know, you can't, when you're 6 years into a project, there's, you know, you're not going to just give up. I mean, of course you got to get it done, but getting that last hurdle. And then when you get the film done, you still have, they say it's, you're only halfway there when the film is done. Then you got to get all the distribution and marketing packages, all that stuff together. That's incredible. E&O insurance. Do you know what it's like to get E&O insurance on a film with this much archival material? And then the high level military and government officials that participated that wanted to sign off on the film after they got a chance to see it. And I'm sitting there going, okay, I've got Senator Harry Reid, former Senate Majority Leader, in this film waiting to see it. And I've got a landing case in Africa at the end that he's going to see where the alleged, you know, beings got out of this UFO and made, you know, telepathic communication with these children. He's going to run for the hills. I was terrified. I was losing sleep over it. I mean, think about it, right? I mean, I've never dealt with close encounters of the third kind cases before. And I was terrified that he was going to say, take my name out of this thing. I don't want to be associated with a film that deals with a landing and these little beings getting out. I mean, it's, you know, so there were so many things going on and so many variables and so many millions away for this film to have failed. It was just an absolute bloody miracle.
If you look at what War and Peace tells us, if War and Peace was brought forward today and brought out by our current editors, it would have landed up being a comic book. And
let's hear.
That's exactly what I think, you know, we're up against with your work, James, because what you've done and all the travails you've gone through in the future, what's going to land up being is you will have made history here. Yeah. That's the fact of the matter. Irrespective of the you know, everything you've gone through, we all have to acknowledge that you have made history. It may not be recognized immediately, but stuff of good quality always, underline the word always to 18 times, comes out, has met that bar in a quantum way. So, you know, the suffering's been difficult, but it's all for a reason, I think.
It does sound a little bit like you shot some of it in Guantanamo under extreme rendition.
There you go.
Look, you know, I sound melodramatic, but I am not exaggerating one bit. I literally have PTSD from this film, and people have said, oh, what's your next project? And I go, oh, like, please don't go there. Like, I need to recover right now.
Just leave me alone. Yeah.
Please.
James, I want to say, can everyone hear me okay, first off?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Unfortunately, my computer mic's not working, so I'm having to go old school. But first off, James, Beautiful job. Bravo. Bravo. Amazing movie. I'm glad to hear you say about cutting everything out and hating doing that and everything, because the one thing when it was done is I wanted it to be longer. I'm like, why only an hour and a half? Why couldn't it be at least an hour and 45 or two? I think you could have done an hour and 45. I was engrossed. Anyone I know who's watched it was engrossed. But here's the thing. When it was all done and the way it ended with the kids, I thought, okay, this is where in the UFO community, we have to step back and go, this isn't for us. This is for the public. This is for all the people who go on my UFO tours, you know, 8,500 right. clients. This is for them. And I'm like, okay. Then I realize it was a huge statement in less is more. And so feel good about that. I mean, hopefully you feel great about the whole thing, but feel good about, I realized then it was a huge statement because less is more. It built the evidence, went into the government covering up, and ended with an ultimate stating of contact and why the beings are here, which was the message to the kids. So I applaud you for the storytelling you did in building it that way, and for the greater impact through less is more. I had to like ruminate with it, you know, for a while, let it percolate to go, oh my God, that's the statement, and it will hold people's attention. And hey, leaving them wanting more is a great thing, because that's where you can put out all the little shorts of additional stuff and people will go online and watch every single one.
Thank you for saying that, Melinda. You know, and I had a cut that I was pretty happy with when it was 2 hours and 10 minutes. And I can tell you right now, I had a theater, about 210 people in the theater, maybe 250. And these were not, there were some UFO experienced, you know, UFO people in the audience, but for the most part, it was more our mainstream target audience and who were interested to learn more about it. But I'm telling you, after 90 minutes, they started fidgeting and I was losing them, getting up, going to the bathroom. And every single person in the room said, beautiful film, too long. You have to cut it shorter, period. And that's when, you know, it was brutal. Look, I went to Virginia, Brazil 4 times. I put my heart and soul into chasing down the witnesses for that case. Beautifully shot. I mean, not 1 second ended up in the movie. Virginia, Brazil, not one frame ended up in the movie. I went to China twice with Don Schmidt and 30 seconds in the credits at the end, all across China. Like, you think that was easy for me to have to cut that out? I mean, it was horrible, but it just didn't work. And I tried 50 different variations of getting it to work. And everyone was like, it doesn't work. Sorry, you're holding on to it for no reason other than you're emotionally attached to it because you knew what it took to get. But trust me, it worsens the quality of this film. You have to cut it. And so that's ultimately what it boiled down to. And so I figured less is more.
You know, how does that reflect, as Melinda alluded to earlier, how does that reflect the effort that you made to, I mean, we've all watched it, you know, within the UFO research community, and there will be, you know, hundreds of who have done that. But in terms of how the public, the general public, these people that know nothing, literally know nothing about this issue, what will be the head whip from them? We're going to say, holy smoke, this guy's done this film. How long has this been going on and why don't I know about it? What will your film do to get those people to understand the head whip and to understand that there's something coming down that you've told them that needs to be understood? How are we going to get to those people?
Well, we're thanks for that question. We are actually getting to those people. You guys can go to the website, and you probably already have. It's thephenomenonfilm.com, and it's updated every day. It's got all the quotes from mainstream. So what's exciting about this project is that not only are we getting requests for screeners from household names, elected officials, people that have made, you know, the films such as classic hits of Back to the Future, but they're willing publicly to put their name on it, which has never happened. I mean, at this level before, it's shocking to me. And I've read a few criticisms online from UFO buffs are like, oh, same old rehashed nonsense, you know, right. Or same old rehashed history. I'm going, yeah, but you guys have to understand, first of all, it's not all the same. I managed to get Nash from Nash and Fortenberry, William Nash on camera, thanks to Tom Tullian, that extremely rare. Tell me how many UFO historians have seen footage of William Nash, okay? What about the daughter of Kenneth Arnold? How many times have people seen her on camera? What about the guy that was in the radar room the night of two consecutive weekends of Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. Al Chop? I mean, those things are extremely rare. Segments that I got from the Truman Library, yes. That 16 millimeter film footage that we had transferred, that whole segment of historic history in the 50s, all black and white. People haven't seen that stuff. The United Nations stuff that Lee Spiegel organized. Lee Spiegel put that event on. He'd never even seen any footage that mm-hmm. we found. So even the UFO historians out there that are well-versed in this topic were shocked at all the archival material that we included. So yes, if you're going to cover history, what are you going to do? A history is history. I can't change it, but at least we can add new, fresh content, new historical testimony, which we did. And we were sitting in the edit room every single day for 3.5 years, and we'd say, where are we going? We're saying, we're on the road to Rua. Look, I know how the general public was going to react. If we didn't build a strong case prior to mm-hmm. the landing case in Africa, there's no way in hell anyone would have believed it. If you walk down the street and ask your, you know, Joe Citizen, hey, if a flying saucer landed in Africa and the occupants got out of the school and interacted with 66 or 100 school children telepathically, you know, depicting this message, people would be like, well, you know, what are you smoking?
I mean, smoking, right? Yeah.
And I was aware of that. I knew what I was up against. So I had to put things in perspective. I had to build the case to get there, because if I transcend the UFO community, which is what our sole objective was, why preach to the choir? Of course, I still want to make something entertaining and fun for all of us. But if I'm going to go beyond that and actually make an impact and make a difference, I had to, you know, get the audience to eat their spinach. So that's what that historical perspective was, to put the recent revelations on the front page of the New York Times in context, right? And build the case for the likelihood of having Joe Public walk out of the theater or walk away from having seen this film and think, that event that occurred in 1994 in Rua, Zimbabwe, at Ariel School, might have just happened. And if we can do that, then we've done our job. And I feel like we've done our job.
Can I ask you a question? I want to ask a question about you. Two of the big interviews you did were John Podesta and Senator Reid. How much of that stuff ended up on the floor? And what was their reaction to the movie when it came out?
Podesta said, I'm so excited. Literally, he emailed me and said, I'm so excited. And let's just say that he requested links for other people that are watching it. So, and not only did Harry Reid, you know, love the movie, but he gave us a quote to use publicly. So he's publicly endorsing the film, which I couldn't believe it. So it's thrilling to watch. It's thrilling to be, like, I'm in the passenger seat right now. I mean, we pushed this, you know, bird out of her nest, and we're just watching her fly. And it's very, very exciting. And look, I was the primary driving force behind this, but this project took a village. It actually is the culmination of all the work that all of us have done for decades and decades to get here. So this should be, we should tip our hats to each and every one of us that this film is out there, and it's in its own world at this point, right?
You know, one of the most important questions that you bring up, James, is what should our role in the research community be at this moment in history? We have spent decades primarily talking to each other and developing an internal dialogue. The disclosure movement is about 20 years old, give or take. I've been thinking about some of these questions for more than twice that time. And one of them is that, as I've gotten more and more involved in this over the decades, is how more and more we think of ourselves as representative. We are ready for disclosure overall. The people who have tuned us in, who study this, who are listening to the documentaries, watching the movies, going to the conferences, reading the books, they've got the mindset. We forget what a modest percentage of the overall national and international population we are. The overwhelming number of people in the world are not ready for this, not at all. And this new documentary is a perfect example of creating something that somebody, a decent person who doesn't think about this stuff, who is busy paying their bills and raising their kids and hoping this pandemic will pass and, you know, whether they'll be able to hold on to their house or their apartment or their job, this is not in their thoughts. And because we all pass through our personal trials, dark nights of the soul, epiphanies, and then come out the other end as sort of initiates, we forget how many people are on the other side. For me, we have to be humanists. We can't get too frustrated. If it weren't for the pandemic, this year alone, with serious government acknowledgments and official pronouncements and agreements by the major world scientific community, this would be a banner year, one of the most extraordinary years since 1947. For those of us that pay attention to this, it still is. But for most people, these things have just shot by. They are appropriately mostly concerned with the pandemic. Obviously, like any of us, I could go on, but just to close with one thought, the pandemic and disclosure are two decidedly different subjects, but is there anything that we can learn from what we're going through with this worldwide pandemic? I think there is. And it hit me, I can tell you, on Wednesday, March 18th, on the weekend of the 14th and 15th, I was in Knoxville with Nick Pope giving my last out-of-town professional talk, spoke to my sister, a registered nurse, who basically said, this is what's coming at us the next 3, 6, 12, 36, 48 months. And I got off the phone and I was concerned. When I got home, I shopped like crazy, like Rommel's quartermaster about to invade Egypt, and locked down on March 18th. And that afternoon I thought, one thing about disclosure, when it really hits, whether they orchestrate it or whether world leaders come together and say, let's make it undeniable, here it is that give or take, at the same moment in time, we can be pretty assured that pretty much everyone in the world is thinking about the same thing at the same moment. And I sat there in my kitchen thinking, good God, this is happening right now all over the world. Savor this moment, think about it in relation to what's going to be coming down on people in the future and people that are not nearly as prepared as you. And you're kind of taken aback with that awareness. And I will shut up now for a little while.
Melinda, you're next. Go ahead.
Oh, Melinda's muted.
Okay. How about Jay?
Can I jump in real quick? First of all, I just want to thank you, James, for making this happen. I've watched the film a few times now, and honestly, I do see this as a historical documentary that will serve as a useful tool in furthering kind of like mainstream awareness on the UFO issue. But something I wanted to just touch upon, which Melinda's mentioned, and I think someone else mentioned as well, I've seen the online, the majority of the community who've watched the phenomenon are hugely supportive of it. And, you know, this is directed more to the minority who felt they weren't given anything new, because I've seen this opinion voiced. And I want to just kind of reiterate a point that I've made before, the point being that the UFO community is oversaturated with data and all sorts of theories. And sometimes people do forget, like how what was just said, just how small of a niche the UFO community truly is in comparison to the wider world. And so my point here is just, at least to my perspective, this documentary, The Phenomenon, is geared more towards public education. You know, there are fascinating stories and statements in this production that for me personally were like really revelatory. But I look at this from the perspective of an uninitiated mainstream viewer. And from that viewpoint, it is like genuinely a groundbreaking historical overview of one of the best kept secrets of all time. And I think that those within the community who feel that this didn't educate them, they should be happy with the fact that they are already in a position of knowledge, and to see this documentary as a tool that can be utilized to bring others to a similar level of knowledge. So I just wanted to kind of, sorry, my throat's a bit funny, but I just wanted to make my
I'm in exactly the same way.
I just wanted I want to make that clear, because hopefully, you know, a shift in the minority view within the community. I do feel this production is fundamentally important to the educational progression of this subject in the mainstream. So just wanted to say thank you for that.
I appreciate you recognizing that very, very much, because, you know, people are like, I didn't go far enough. And, you know, I mean, look, the overwhelming response has been incredible.
Huge.
And I've been really, really pleased. But, you know, then you get these people, and I'm sitting there going, you have no idea what I've been through. And I am out there fighting the good fight. I'm trying to fight the good fight. And I'm trying to present a body of evidence that could be presented to mainstream to potentially break one of the biggest stories in the history of mankind. Yeah. And that's not easy to do. And please, like, you know, like, at least give me some kudos for my efforts, because I almost died making this. Like, I can't even emphasize enough to you how difficult this was to pull off. And it took a village. It really did. But thank you for recognizing that. I do very much appreciate it. And I went out of my way to throw some new spins on some historical events.
Absolutely. No, you're most welcome, mate. Well deserved. Well deserved.
Thank you.
Let's hear from Melinda next, and then let's hear from Danny after Melinda. No, Melinda, I can't hear you again.
I've got to go in about 10, 15
minutes.
Okay.
I'm seeing. I just muted you.
James, while we're waiting, could I just ask you for a second? I do a radio program up here in Canada. It's called The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. And Richard has about 45 different affiliates, both in Canada and the United States, through Zoomer Radio here in Canada. It's live on the internet, plus live on radio. And I'd like to formally invite you to participate on some Sunday in the near future to come forward and come on the show, because at any given time, Richard has over 65 to 70,000 listeners just on radio alone. And I'm hoping that at some point within the next month or so that you could join us on the Richard Serrett show. So I'm going to just invite you to that, and maybe you and I can connect and maybe put that together, because I know Richard would be just absolutely ecstatic about having you come on the radio program with us for about an hour or even more if you wish.
Yeah. So if you wouldn't mind, send me a Facebook message, and then do it through email, and then I pass it through the people that I'm working so that it doesn't overlap and, you know, all that nonsense.
Great, great.
But yes, I'd be delighted to do that.
So do it over Facebook or email?
Email's best.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, James C. Fox.
What would that be?
It's James C. as in Charlie Fox, James C. Fox at Gmail.
Okay.
Melinda, are you back in now? I think, she's having audio. I did it on my part. It says you're unmuted now. So I didn't know if maybe you wanted to exit and try rejoining, maybe if that would reset your audio, but
I can read her lips pretty well. I could tell what she was saying.
I know. She is pretty good at
really
mouthing it to me. Okay. Let's hear from Danny Silva.
Okay. Never mind.
Hi, James.
The
documentary is amazing, James.
Oh, thank you. Is this Joseph?
Just like 30 seconds. I've run for Congress twice, 2008 and 2017. The ridicule on this issue, it was overwhelming in 2008, somewhat less so in 17. But I want to thank you on behalf of every human being in the United States, especially whoever runs for political office and chooses to address this issue, because you have changed the world such that political candidates can no longer be ridiculed in the way we have been. It's impossible to do in the face of the work you've done. And I hear you that you have PTSD about it. I have PTSD over running for office. It's not a lot of fun to try to do it in the world. But there is an opposition that is incomprehensibly horrifying. You know, and thank you for sending me an early screener. I was so looking forward to seeing you at the Sonoma Film Festival. UFO chairman had that party planned. My heart breaks for him. I know he was one of the producers. I am so grateful. But I want to express that gratitude on behalf of every person who chooses to run for political office from now on. You have changed the world.
Well, I really appreciate that. I mean, like I keep saying, this is we're all in this together. So this is really the culmination of all the work from all the researchers. It's one of the reasons why I dedicated the film to Stanton Friedman, because honestly, this film probably wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the likes of of Stanton Friedman and all the researchers out there, that everybody has made a significant contribution in getting to where we are today.
Okay, Danny Silva, go ahead.
The phenomenon's great, James. Thank you for doing it. And like Jay said, it's a great tool for us to use to bring to the public, and that's all that we can ask for. I was wondering, how did you choose what to include in the film, editing aside? How did you choose what was credible, what stories you thought were credible versus, you know, just noise?
That's a good question. I'm pretty skeptical. I didn't believe the Rua case when I first heard about it, because I just thought there's no way something of that significance with that sheer volume of eyewitness testimony in broad daylight could occur and the whole world not know about it. To me, it just seems so unlikely, you know. But I've learned over the years to sort of suspend judgment and review the evidence and then draw my conclusion, as opposed to having that quick knee-jerk reaction. And so I've learned from my own reaction. And so I knew kind of what I was up against, even as someone who's making documentaries on the topic, if I'm not gonna believe it. So what it takes, and again, it's so important for people to understand, like, I'm not out there trying to prophesize and get people to join my cult of believers, not at all. And I don't ever wanna come across that way. But I really feel like there's a body of evidence that is so compelling that needs to be shown, it needs to be heard, it needs to be seen. And that was my objective, is like, I have a very methodical way of going about editing in the studio, and it's incredibly time consuming. And the process took about a year and a half to 2 years. And that is, I go through every single interview from every single person, and I color code and organize them and chronologically assemble it. And it takes bloody forever. And then in the middle of that, I switched platforms from Final Cut Pro to Adobe Premiere. That added about 6 months to the project. But I color coordinate everything in different colors. Green is B-roll. Blue is B-roll. Green is like the start of a story. Pink and then purple and then dark purple. And the dark purple, and then I do elevated sequences within the timeline, and that stuff that you end up with is the purple and then different levels of height within the timeline. And that's the stuff I call the GMs, the golden moments. And then I slowly start to stitch the golden moments together, and I just let everything else fall, right? Because that stuff doesn't, if every single statement you hear doesn't move you profoundly, then it got cut, right? The testimony had to be really compelling. So every clip, almost every clip, ended up being purple. And so, and there were still lots of purple clips ended up not being in the film, but I had to cut those out too. But it's a very tedious process. And, but that's how ultimately I whittle it down to the best of the best.
Do you have go-to sources that you use to make you think a certain case is credible, or you just kind of use your own judgment?
Oh, well, I mean, like, for instance, with the landing case in Australia, I mean, look, you know, Paula Harris is the one that pulled me over and introduced me to James Rigney at a conference a few years ago. And of course, I had the same reaction at the time, like, oh, really, a UFO landed at a school and the world doesn't know about it, you know? But again, I said to myself, just don't draw too much, you know, criticism initially. Let's hear this out. And when you have a mass sighting in broad daylight like that, it's pretty hard to debunk all those people, right? Mm-hmm. And so I find those cases particularly compelling, especially if there's photographic evidence connected to it. Not to say that we can say definitively that the photograph that James took of that object a few kilometers away a day or so prior to that is connected, but it's highly probable that it would be. But yeah, those are the cases that I find really, really, really compelling.
Thanks.
Oh, sure.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Wonderful.
Let's hear from Melinda quickly. And then I think, James Rigney, you have to get scooching. So let's hear from you after Melinda.
Perfect. And then I got to go after that.
Okay. Well, I want James to share. I was just saying earlier that I wanted to chime in with what Peter was saying. I was realizing that this morning, and realizing only like 1 in 50 of the clients going on my tour know anything about the current disclosure. And these are people who want to know, who have an interest. And James, thank you for not only the amazing work you've done, but for creating something that I can tell all my clients and possible clients, watch this. This is like the primer before going on my tour to be able to know now, and that it's definitely made for that greater public. It is not just for ufology. And anyway, so again, thank you for that. I'll stop now and go to James. I just wanted to be sure and share that. There was something else, but it's escaped my mind now. But
thank you, Melinda.
Yeah, James Rigney, I'll give you the time there.
Yeah, hi, thanks for that. James Fox offered me the chance to see a screener maybe 6 months ago. And I refused. I really wanted to see it in a big cinema. I really wanted to feel it and just see the public response. You know, my interest is, this was always going to be a great film. It was always going to be well produced. I'd seen bits and pieces of it. I'd worked on bits of it in Australia with James. My main interest is to what extent this was going to hit the target. And of course, we never got to see that in the cinema. So my main interest, is this going to hit the target? Now, I've been to a lot of lectures and I've walked out and I've gone, that was just incredible. And other people have said, oh, that was so boring, that was so dry. So I realised a long time ago that a lot of people just want entertainment, you know. So there are people who want information and there are people who want entertainment. This film is about information. So I think it will hit the target with a lot of people. And to a lot of others, it just may be too much. It's pretty intense. And are those people ready for it anyway? There is individual cognitive dissonance, and there's also cultural cognitive dissonance. So I wasn't aware, James, that you had a lot of quotes on your website, but I did trawl. I was interested to see how the mainstream, as you are, I think as we all are, the main thing behind this is how is the mainstream going to receive this, and to what extent will it affect the critical mass of the subject matter? And if I may, again, I wasn't aware you had quotes on your website, but I went through a whole, there was probably 20 different reviews yesterday from mainstream, different mainstream sources. If I can read just a couple of them to you, and this was really encouraging for me. One of them said, if you weren't disturbed by this documentary, you weren't paying attention. And I thought, wow. If you are new to the world of ufology, prepare to have your mind blown away. I can sum this doc, and these are all different websites. I can sum up this document in one word, incredible. Another one, the phenomena is utterly convincing. Another one said, again, I can sum it up in one word, credible. So when you're seeing those kind of reviews coming out of mainstream, and then you see CNN doing a review, and then you see The Guardian, and it's, you know, there's been a couple of bad reviews, but on the most part, this is already having some impact. Will it be the game changer? Maybe. We're all hoping it will be. The timing is incredible. I think the appetite for this stuff amongst the thinking public, I think, is at an all-time high. So I think we just have to see how it pans out, James. But you know, certainly it's incredible. So well done.
Oh, thank you, James. That's really sweet. I let everybody know is that there's an army marching behind us on this one. The machine behind this effort, one of the gentlemen's name is Dan Farah, and he produced Ready Player One with Steven Spielberg, which was a blockbuster hit. And he's been putting his reputation on the line and utilizing his Rolodex and calling all of his contacts and all the people that he's reached out to for screeners have watched it and are willing to publicly put their name on it, which I've never seen before. Usually it's like, oh, I'd like to see it, but I'd like everyone not to know that I am seeing it. Well, this is like I said, I'm a passenger at this point, you know, but the preliminary feedback is incredibly encouraging. The reviews are rolling in so fast, I can't keep up with them. And it seems to be, you know, the algorithm of it is that the more people watch it, the more popular it gets, the more it's put out there. Do you know what I mean? Like we were, I think we're number two in the world on the charts in iTunes for documentaries. We were number 38 a couple of days ago worldwide in the charts for all films. And now we're down to like 21 or 22. So let's hope that trend keeps happening. And it's very exciting. Like I said, at this point, I'm just kind of a passenger.
Can I add just one more point, perhaps? That last maybe 2 minutes of the film with the kids, and particularly the pauses at the end and the looks on their faces. On some, one gentleman contacted me and he said, I was crying. But apart from the emotional content, that somehow on some subliminal level to me represented everything about this subject matter. Everything we've invested in this for so long, for me, 7 years, for you guys, you know, 30, 40 years. There was something about that, the looks on those kids' faces and the way you edited and put that together, that just somehow, that said everything to me about where we're at and what we've all been through. So I just wanted to make that comment. And I can't even put my finger on why, but a lot of people are saying something similar.
So listen, let me tell you how that happened. The Rua section was probably the most difficult section. Actually, yeah, Rua and Socorro were two of the trickiest sections. Socorro might have beat that one. That was really hard. We edited probably well over 1,000 hours for 7 minutes, maybe more. It was insanely challenging. But in the middle of doing the Rua section, we had 50 hours of material to whittle down to 7 minutes, 8 minutes. I thought, God, wouldn't it be amazing to take the children, images of the children, contemplative, not saying anything, and take them as adults, their voices, after they've had 20 plus years to process what had gone down and to evaluate and just sort of analyze and articulate better because they're adults now, and put those adult voices under them as children, right? And so I spent probably 5 days or so putting this whole thing together where I took the adult voices and I put them under the images of the children, and it was very powerful. It took a lot of editing. And I thought, well, I don't know exactly where this is going to go, but I'm just going to grab it and copy it and paste it, put it at the end of the timeline, and I'll deal with it later. Well, probably 3 months went by, 3 or 4 months went by, and I'd forgotten about it. And one day I was in the edit room, and the player head was passing over the timeline, and I forgot to press stop. And it got to that section that I'd created months earlier, and accidentally, inadvertently, I deleted all the audio of them as adults underneath them as children. Right? So you had the images of them as children, and now suddenly you had no audio. But there was some random song that was playing, and I just looked at it, and I went, and I started to cry. And it was so powerful. I knew right then and there, this is it. This is the end of the film. There's no place to go from here. And that's how...
Isn't that how we all feel, James? That just...
Yeah.
That number...
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah. So total.
Let's give the last word to Tom Whitmore, and then we'll let the fox go.
James, I was just wondering, once we get past COVID, are you going to be able to have a distribution deal to have a theater run?
Yes. Yeah.
So, yes. The good news is, I don't know if those of you out there know, I don't really get into it right now, but we had some disagreements and some litigation. We had some issues, okay? When we decided to pivot after COVID hit and we were no longer looking at a successful rollout in theaters, we had some mistakes were made under the cloud of COVID, and I fought back. Anyway, the good news is that I still own the film. I will still own the film. And there are talks of getting into theaters once theaters start getting back up and running. And I will do everything in my power to ensure that takes place.
Good.
And DVD, James?
Well, you know, it's up to the distributors. I'm sure eventually it will be put on DVD. I'll find out about that more. Yes, I will look into that.
James, I certainly hope you get a theater run. You know, I think all the great reviews you're getting, like they were saying, by mainstream sources and the political people behind you, hopefully all that will help you to get into the theaters. I think it would be so powerful in the theaters.
Thank you guys. And listen, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate all your support and enthusiasm and all that each and every one of you do.
Can we do one more with Mark McNabb? I think he was trying to jump in. He's the film producer from Canada. He wants to say something. So Mark,
can you jump in? Mark.
Thanks, Grant. James, first of all, congratulations. I've followed your work back to I Know What I Saw. Back in 2009. And I just want to commend you just because I can sense in your narrative that you feel, I know that you feel a responsibility to get information out there. And I think the best part of the viewing experience for me was you're leaving it for the next generation. You know, like you've put it all together. It's been, you know, Rob and I've only been at it for 5 years. And even though we've had the experiences that we've had, I look at a body of work like that and I look at your passion and I can tell how excited you are about it. So I just, filmmaker to filmmaker, I just wanted to commend you on the fact that you have put all your heart and soul into it. And it shows, and it's going to be something that'll be seen for centuries.
Thank you. I really appreciate hearing that. And I appreciate, as a fellow filmmaker, you know, your appreciation for what it takes to put something like this together. It's like, honestly, what it felt like, you're in the ring with a monster and you got to go 20 rounds and you feel like you're going to die in the first 2 seconds of each round. And all you're trying to do is stay alive, like literally trying to figure out how to survive to the next round. And that's what it was like for 7.5 years.
Very inspiring is what I wanted to really make sure that you know.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, James.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, guys.
I'll end your segment by saying, next time, maybe we can discuss the Jacques Vallée portions of the film and what it's like to have a mentor in Jacques. And I do want to spill the beans. You said you're running off to go hiking. And I got to ask you, are you going to be driving the Zamora white truck to this hiking location?
No, I'm not. I know. Zamora's truck had an oil leak, so it's actually in the shop getting the oil thing fixed.
Take care of that. Take care of that piece of history right there.
I do. Yes. I love that truck. Love that truck.
So my only advice to you, James, would be if you're driving, take the car.
Yes. Thanks, you guys. Bye, everybody.
Right. Thank you, James. Bye. Talk to you soon.